There, Walt here from Walt in PA, back with another episode of the, shit, what am I calling this thing? Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast. Took a minute to remind myself. It's been a little while. So, the objective behind the name, you know, Motorcycle Adjacent is, the whole idea is that I want to be able to turn the camera on and record these long form videos and kind of include motorcycles and the topics that kind of sort of surround them, and that's where the whole adjacent thing is coming from. So if you're kind of curious about the name, that explains it. At least that's the thoughts that are swirling around in my crazy head. So anyway, in this episode, we're kind of doing this off the cuff. There were a couple of things I wanted to talk about, but I think the first thing we'll discuss is the direction of the podcast. So I've been kicking around different show ideas. I'm still not settled down on exactly what I want to do, but I think episode 3, we're kind of moving in the direction that we're going to be staying with out here in the shed for the time being. I've dug out my old podcast mic from a couple of years back when I was toying around with this before. Got myself some lights in the back to add some mood, splash of blue around the 2022 Yamaha MT-09, and trying to liven this thing up just a little bit. We'll see how it goes, what I can do in post, and see if I can polish it just a touch. So really, that's kind of the only progress I've made in the podcast run, is kicking around a couple of ideas, trying to, I don't know, just add a couple of little flares, different things to how I'm doing the recording process. And I also purchased the domain name Motorcycle Adjacent. I think I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I bought Motorcycle Adjacent and not Motorcycle Adjacent Podcast, because that URL is like massive. And Motorcycle Adjacent just made more sense. So I guess the kind of first thing to talk about, which is, This is where the adjacent part comes in, because it's kind of related to motorcycles, but not really. And that's an equipment upgrade. So I'm actually recording the audio on this brand new Apple MacBook Pro 13 with the M2 chip. And the reason I got this, I wasn't even planning on buying one. My partner and I, we run a business where we do AutoCAD drawings, basically millwork shop drawings for commercial and residential applications. Basically, if a commercial outfit needs to manufacture cabinets and they don't have the manpower to do the drawings, or they don't have the desire to do the drawings in-house, they sub it out to us and we take care of that stuff, drawing everything up in AutoCAD. And business has been going pretty well over the last few years, and we've set up kind of a budgeting system for equipment. It was a way to make it fair so that we weren't buying equipment because we had to buy equipment and we both needed the same thing, sort of a thing. So I think last year I upgraded my phone, and my business partner upgraded parts to his computer, and it all kind of worked out with this budgeting thing. Now, this year I had made mention that I was thinking about using the remainder of my budget to purchase a new MacBook. I've had one, I still have it, but I rarely use it. An old MacBook Pro from years ago, and I thought it was a great machine. It did a lot for me. And I had mentioned that I wanted to get into more YouTube videos, especially through the business, doing various things for the business, and I was considering buying a MacBook Pro to kind of streamline that whole process. Now, I could easily do it on my primary computer. However, it's getting to the point now where editing video is becoming less fun, mostly because I'm spending so much time at my desk that I feel trapped, I feel chained to it. So a typical day for me, right? I'll get up around 4 a.m., I'll make a pot of coffee, get ready for the day, sit down, check a couple of emails, you know, do the little odds and ends first thing, and then I'm usually working by 5 a.m. for my day job. Now, I'll work from 5 a.m. till around 2 o'clock, and then generally, I'm taking a working lunch. I don't really step away from my desk much, and I do that because I've got young kids at home, and periodically throughout the day, they'll need something, so the time that I would be spending at lunch, it's just easier to sit down at my computer with lunch while I work. And so anyway, I'm working from like 5 a.m. to around 2. And then most days I'm rolling right from the day job into the business and then working, you know, usually between 2 and 3 o'clock to around 5 o'clock, then break for dinner, and then back at it again until 8. Usually 8 p.m. is my hard stop time. That's when I want to be away from the computer. But just kind of looking back at that, that's a long-ass day. And then when you combine that with video editing for podcast, or not necessarily a podcast, but moto vlogging and the various aspects of that, the whole social media end of it, I spent so much time in front of my primary computer that I was getting dragged down, and I really didn't want to do any editing. Not because editing sucks and I don't enjoy it, but it's just because I just felt trapped. Like I just couldn't get away from my desk. So my hope was that by getting this little MacBook Pro, I'd be able to do some editing on the fly, come out here to the shed, edit some things while I have a cigar, or sit out on the deck and edit, or sit at the couch, you know, spend a little time with the kids and tap away at my computer, do whatever I needed to do. I thought like it would provide me some escape. So I ordered the machine. I haven't done one single bit of business video editing on it, but I have edited a couple of moto vlogs, and it is amazing, amazing, amazing. I realized that the 14 is probably a better buy, even if you get it with the M1 chip, but the size is perfect. It's about the same size as my Microsoft Surface. It works really well, just super happy with it, very, very happy, and it does a tremendous job with DaVinci Resolve doing some fairly light video editing. I mean, I'm not doing a whole lot of Fusion stuff, hardly any at all, really. So the basic tasks that I throw at it, it does them, and it does them well, so I've been really happy with it. Hopefully that allows me to chip away through some of the backlog of video footage that I have, which you've seen already, unintentionally. I edited 3 videos that were recorded back in September of 2021, I think. I recorded a video, The Literal Fork in the Road, which I wound up combining with Scrap Metal Ice Cream Cone into one very short destination ride video. I think it ran about 4 minutes total. There is a video where I talk about Chopper Fett and Big Smitty Rides. And then there was one more video where, I don't remember what I talked about, but there were 3 videos in total. And then I edited, Classic Auto Mall. So I created these 3 videos, I got them edited, threw them on YouTube, and then I was hoping to use them as kind of filler content. So if I wasn't able to record one of these episodes, or I got tied up doing other things and I couldn't record a full-blown episode of something current, that I could fall back on some of this older content, because I've got quite a bit of it tied up on portable hard drives, and I would like to use some of it rather than scrap it, even though I did scrap lots and lots of gigabytes of footage. And the reason being, I just wanted to kind of cull anything I may not use. So I started just going through footage and just clicking in various points. And if the video seemed boring to me, or I couldn't figure out what I was talking about, or I couldn't figure out what the topic might have been, I just deleted it. And I wound up getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff. But there are still lots of content that I'd like to go through, edit, and publish. And this new MacBook has been just a great way to get an opportunity to get away from my desk and edit some of that stuff. So last week I was planning on doing this episode and then publishing it, but I got really busy with work. I wasn't able to do it. So I wound up publishing a second one of those legacy videos. So far so good. So in the last episode, episode 2, I had mentioned that I hurt my back for my 40th birthday. Things seem to be mostly back to normal. I still get kind of a twinge if I move the wrong way. It's a little bit of weakness if I bend the wrong way. But otherwise, I'm feeling about 85%. I did wind up going on my very first ride late last week. Steve was checking up on me, which was really nice, asking me how I was doing, if I gotten out for a ride yet, like when I was planning on going out for a ride. And the first ride that I wound up taking was with Steve and his wife. We did a little loop around the local area, and I felt pretty good. I mean, there were spots where I got a little stiff moving around corners and stuff, but it wasn't until I got off the bike to fill it with gas that my back started bothering me, and I don't know whether it was just kind of throwing my leg over it or what triggered it, but there was some mild irritation there. We wound up heading home shortly afterwards anyway because it was getting late. I think it was coming up on 8 o'clock, and this time of year it's starting to get dark. So it was a successful ride. It was a fun ride. I wish I could say that I've been riding a lot, you know, now that I'm kind of bouncing back, but things have been so chaotic with work and business, and, you know, things are ramping up with the kids' school schedules now that they're starting again soon, and summer sports, and it's been really hard to get out and ride as much as I was earlier in the summer. And I'm kind of hoping to end the year really strong. I mean, up until this point, I've been putting, at one average, 1,000 miles a month on the bike. I had my 4,000-mile service on the bike right before I hurt myself. So that was late July. It's now mid-August. And I haven't put more than a couple hundred miles on it between mid-July to mid-August, which kind of sucks because I've been really enjoying riding the bike and putting mileage on it and seeing the odometer turn over. I mean, I realize to some people seeing the odometer creep up, you know, another 1,000 miles, another 1,000 miles, another 1,000 miles, you know, they just see the resale value dropping and dropping. But for me, you know, I bought the thing to ride it. It's been loads of fun, and I just like putting miles on it. I mean, it's expensive. Don't get me wrong. Price of gas is still high. And man, service costs on that thing are getting kind of expensive. So I did the first service at 600 miles, which set me back about $320 or so, which effectively was an oil change and a bunch of maintenance checks. They, you know, checked bolts and fasteners and various other components. They ran an electronic test on it to make sure that everything was in spec, you know, the ECU and all that, because there's a lot of electronic components on it. Diagnostic, that's the word I'm looking for. So after the 600-mile service, I had the ECU redone as a warranty service, so that didn't cost me anything. And then the first major service was at 4,000 miles. I took it over and dropped it off at the dealership with about $4,300 on it. It set me back, I want to say it was like $425, which was basically, again, an oil change and a variety of checks. Even when I took the bike in, I go up to the service department and I tell the guy, you know, I want to schedule a service, thinking that it was going to be a little ways out. And he seemed confused, and I said, yeah, I'm here for, I want to schedule my 4,000-mile service. He said, well, is that right? That seems really short. He pulled up the service manual for this bike, and sure enough, service intervals are 4,000, even though other manufacturers are pushing them out further and further. I mean, Triumph is doing the 10,000-mile service intervals with their Triumph, and I believe other manufacturers are pushing theirs out as well. Not quite to 10,000 miles, but more than 4,000-mile intervals. So, you know, we're in there, and he's telling me, like, you know, you could just do the oil change, and then, like, you're probably be okay for everything else. You know, it's just checks. Like, you know, there is no major service here other than the oil change. So I said, well, you know, I've been riding this thing a lot, 4,000 miles, and at that point it was like from March till July. So I said, you know, I want to do everything by the book just in case there's ever a warranty issue in that first year. So, you know, I'll just schedule the service. I'll pay a little bit more for it. I'll have the service records, and, you know, I'll sleep better at night knowing that if anything happens within the first year, I'm like absolutely completely covered. There's no loopholes that I need to worry about slipping through because, you know, I didn't have the 4,000-mile service, or I didn't have the 600-mile service done per the owner's manual. So again, that set me back about $425. And then he called me up before it was finished, and he says, you know, I just want to stress that you do not need tires right now. However, with the rate that you're riding this bike, you're going to need tires long before your next service. So he said, you know, that's something to keep in mind. You know, try to figure out what kind of tires you want, and you know, you may be looking at having to order them in the next month or two. So he gave me the measurements, which I think were 2 millimeters and 3 millimeters for front and rear. And I got a price quote on them, and the numbers were kind of shocking. We did. I asked him if he could give me a price on Michelin Road 5s, because they are the de facto sport touring tire, from what I understand. Like, everyone seems to love them. They seem to be like the best tire on the market for the type of riding that I do. You know, and he tried to steer me away towards like Continental Conti Motions, which I had on the Honda and I didn't like. Not that they were bad tires, but they wore much faster than I was expecting. And for the first, I'm going to say 1,000 miles, they rode really hard. Like, it felt like a suspension adjustment had been made, because I was getting so much shock and vibration through the bars that I hadn't been getting before. And I think it's just because it was a much, much stiffer tire, and it was just kind of translating through. So I wasn't really thrilled with the Conti Motions. And again, the very frustrating part of this entire process was I had those Conti Motions put on my Honda CB650F with the assumption that, or under the impression that, I would be getting longer than OEM tire life out of them. You know, the sales guy explicitly told me that, you know, these tires are worth the money. So I paid extra for the Sport Touring Conti Motions over the OEM Bridgestones. And I didn't get anywhere near the mileage that I did out of the OEM tires. Now, granted, I had been riding it a lot harder, you know, as I owned the bike longer. But when I traded it in, the first thing they told me was like, oh, you know, this thing's going to need tires. And it was like, wait a minute, I just had new tires put on this thing 3 months ago. I can't possibly need new tires. Oh, no, you need tires. They brought out the measuring tool and they measured it. And sure enough, like, it was 3 millimeters or something like that. You know, technically it would have passed, but they were saying that it would have needed tires before they could sell it. Whether it was a sales ploy or not, I don't know. But it left me with kind of a bad taste in my mouth with the Conti Motions, between the way they handled and the tire wear I got out of them. So, to get back to the point, he gave me a price of $750 for Michelin Road 5s. Now, that is installed, you know, from the ground up. I take the bike over, they take the old wheels off, take the old tires off, mount the new tires, dispose of the old tires. So it's like, you know, 100% all in, $750 to do the tire change. And when he gave me the numbers initially, it was like $550 for the tires and then another $200 for labor. So I said, thanks for looking it up. You know, I'll keep that in mind and let you know what I want to do. Well, the first thing I did was I went on Revzilla and I looked at the new Michelin Road 6s, and I could get those for, I think, through Revzilla, it would have been about $500. I wound up ordering a set through Motorsport, I think it was. They did a package deal where you order a front and rear tire and they knocked a few bucks off. After taxes and all that, it was like $490 for a set of Michelin Road 6s, which are sitting on the floor right outside of the camera's view. And so I have the new tires. They're ready to go on the bike when these old tires, when these Bridgestone, I think they're Battle Axe tires, are shot, which should be, I don't know, in about a month. Now, fortunately, Steve, you've kind of seen him lots of times in various videos, rides that Aprilia RS660. He bought a tire machine. So I'm planning on taking full advantage of his new machine so that I can do my own tires. I'll pull them off, I'll mountain balance them, that sort of thing, and it'll save me $200 in labor. And if Steve hadn't have bought a tire machine, I may have. I was actually looking at the ABBA Superbike stand makes a tire change kit, which is pretty affordable. Now, the one that Steve bought was a Nomar, and it's a much more robust machine. And I think I would be much happier with the setup that he got. Had he not ordered one, that probably would have ordered the ABBA. But now that I see his, if I were to buy another one, I'd probably buy the Nomar kit, much like he did. And I think it set him back about $900. But even so, you know, that's the tire machine, and it's also the balancer. Now, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it seems like a big upfront cost, but he rides the shit out of that RS660, and his wife has been riding quite a bit as well this year. So he's going to be doing two bikes, tires for two bikes, probably twice a year. I mean, at the rate that they're riding, they're probably going to go through at least one set of tires a season, maybe two. You know, there's probably some overlap. Probably average out like three sets of tires a year between the two bikes. And then obviously I'm going to be going through at least one, maybe two as well, per year. So it's a worthwhile investment. If it pays for itself pretty quickly, if you're paying $200 to have your tires taken off and changed at a dealership, you know, do the math. A couple of tire changes and it's paid for. So seems like a really good investment, and I'm looking forward to using Steve's really good investment. So I guess there's only one other thing that I wanted to talk about, you know, before I let you go. And I want to kind of make this a regular thing where I talk about some other things in a motovlogging community. So just, well, it must have been yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday, I was catching up on some video backlog, and I watched a video from Chopper Fett in which he asked kind of an interesting question. Would you rather have one bike for X number of dollars or multiple bikes totaling X number of dollars? So an example that he made is, you know, would you rather have a Harley CVO that's going to run you $40,000 to $50,000, or would you rather have three bikes with a combined total value of $40,000 to $50,000? And I thought it was a pretty interesting question, because there isn't a high dollar bike that's kind of on my radar. I'm just really happy with that 2022 Yamaha MT-09 SP glowing in blue behind me, and I can't see myself upgrading it in the very near future anyway. But it poses an interesting question. So are there any higher dollar bikes that I would consider riding or consider owning? The first of which is, you know, maybe a decade or two down the line, I could see myself rocking a Goldwing, you know, putting some serious miles on the bikes as the kids get older and go off and do their own thing. I could see a Goldwing. You know, it's an expensive bike, but, you know, in the near future, definitely not. I could also see myself riding like a Yamaha FJR 1300, a sport touring bike. You know, not as big and ergonomic as a Goldwing, but again, more expensive than the MT-09 that I'm currently riding. So to answer that question, I would prefer multiple bikes, and not because, you know, I want all the bikes kind of a thing, but because I like the idea of having different bikes for different uses. So for instance, the MT-09 is pretty much the do everything street bike. It's done everything I've needed it to do, from hitting highways and riding down to, you know, Lewes Ferry for a ferry ride, all the way down to hitting little local county roads, which are narrow and twisty and low speed limit kind of things. Like, you know, it's done those two things and everything in between, and I've been super happy with it. It's done all of that without issue. So I would struggle to buy another bike to fit in that slot. For instance, I really, really like the Kawasaki Z900 RS. Despite the outcries of the fanboys in that video that I did a little while back, I really, really like that bike. I would love to own one, but it wouldn't make sense to own an RS, a 900 RS. And an MT-09. They are not the same bike. One's a four-cylinder, the other's a three-cylinder, one's a retro bike, one's a modern. But they, in my mind, they would serve the same purpose. They'd be for the same type of riding. They would be for the same type of roads. Therefore, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have two bikes to occupy the same sort of riding. So, you know, if I had 20 grand to spend and I just spent 11 on the MT-09, I'd probably be looking at something like a Kawasaki Ninja 400, you know, a little sport bike. I'm probably a little too big for a little sport bike, but wishful thinking and all that. Because I want a smaller displacement bike to be riding on some of these little back roads. You know, you don't need tons of power to be doing 35, 40 miles an hour through a twisty backcountry road, you know, tree lined, and you know, you don't need all that horsepower. So something like a 400 would be loads of fun, would be easier to maintain, would be more fuel efficient, and it would probably still have plenty of power to do everything I would need it to do in that application. So, you know, I could see myself having an MT-09 and then having a Ninja 400 and, you know, maybe something like a Royal Enfield Himalayan, you know, to do a little bit of off-roading. I just think that having multiple bikes to serve different purposes, at least for me, is much more appealing than having like one big, really expensive bike, even if it was a do-it-all bike, because let's face it, I don't know that a one bike that does it all really exists. I mean, for granted, let's take that Goldwing, right? Years down the line, maybe I could see myself with some white New Balances riding on down the road on a Goldwing. And I'm sure it could do everything that MT-09 can do, and probably better in a lot of ways. But would you really want to drag that big, heavy 800-pound bike or whatever it weighs and hit these little back twisty roads? I'm sure it could do it, but would you want to lug that big bike out for a short little ride? You know, would you want to lug it out for a 20-minute, 30-minute ride around town? It just seems like an awful lot of bike for that application. So while it could do everything that bike can do, I think in certain applications, different bikes do them better. You know, and I think that, again, a little 400 would probably do backcountry roads better than the MT-09, just because that's got like way more power than the road needs. It's blast, don't get me wrong. I do not regret buying that bike, even in the slightest bit. But, you know, I would like having something else, you know, just to toy around with for, again, different applications. So that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you could do me a huge favor and hit the thumbs up button on this video. It helps spread the word and gets me exposure to other people that are on YouTube, because, again, you're liking the content. It also lets me know that I am on the right track with producing content that you enjoy. And if you're not already subscribed, do me a favor and subscribe. It's free. And again, helps spread the word. Anyway, that's going to do it. Hope you enjoyed this video. As always, thanks for watching, ride safe, and I'll catch you in the next one.